This is Shirlene Hall Bartholomew, and Mom and Dad Hall and Charlotte are visiting us. We're sitting here waiting for Ginger to have her baby. And in the meantime, I've got them cornered to give their oral history. And I have a whole list of questions.
About 150 to be exact.
two years ago, we got through some of them out west, and we're looking for that tape now. But in the meantime, we're going to pick up from where we began 2 years ago, or where we ended 2 years ago, and we think we're on question number 14. What did you like to do with your spare time when you were a child?
By the way, the date is August 7th, 1977. It's Sunday afternoon. We've just finished a very fine dinner that Shirlene prepared, and we're home from sacrament meeting and whatnot. It's about 25 minutes after 4. What was your question again, Shirlene?
Okay. What did you like to do with your spare time when you were a child?
Well, it depends on how young I was. When I was really young, my parents said my favorite pastime was climbing over the fence they had built around the yard to keep me in and running a block and a half down to Washington Avenue in Ogden, Utah to see the streetcars go by. I don't remember that part. But they said another thing I liked to do when I was very young was play in the water and squirt the hose around.
That's where Daniel gets it.
Every
You're
kid likes to do that. When I was older, I had the wanderlust. I liked to explore the countryside. I may have already said this, too bad I can't find that other tape. In Marriott, I ranged far and wide for about 5 miles around where we lived on West 12th Street. Well, we lived near West 12th Street. The street we were on was the next block north, and I guess that was a long block north of 12th Street. We lived about 1 mile from the corner on which the Internal Revenue Service building begins. The Marriott Ward used to be on that corner. I knew most everything that existed within a 5 mile radius of my home. Swamps, ditches, canals and creeks, fields, junkyards, all kinds of things. They used to have some trouble with gambling back during my youth, probably when I was around 8 or 9 or 10, and the sheriffs would get the illegal pinball machines. It was pinball machine gambling that would return money if you put the pinball holes in the right place. But they would take these things down near the bottom of West 12th Street. That road used to end at a bridge across the Weber River near where the Weber and the Ogden Rivers join. And I found out that they were smashing these machines up and just leave them there. And they had all kinds of magnets and coils and lights, and so I could get neat junk out of those machines for my scientific experiments.
And he hasn't ever quit collecting junk for his neat
That's
scientific
sure.
experiments.
He's got personal junk now.
Well, they say that I think it was my great-grandfather Hall. I don't know which one. That's probably the first Henry C. before my grandfather.
Henry C. Jr.
Was it Henry C. Jr.,
yes.
My own grandfather?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes, he's the one that took the jump and started out.
Anyway, he started out, I suppose, to go from Ohio to Iowa. And he had a wagon and a mule and his new bride. And he would buy junk as he went along the way and sell it to people further along. So, you see, I'm just a junk man by inheritance.
Blame it on your progenitor.
Good.
You ask what else I liked to do when I was young, was that it?
Yeah, what did you do with your spare time?
Well, I loved baseball. I may have mentioned that already, too.
I don't think
it was
so.
My favorite game. I think I told you how the kid used to hold me when we'd march out. Things were formal in those days. For recess, you would line up and march out of school to a record being played. A Victrola, you know, they didn't have electronic amplifiers. Yeah, and you'd do the same to come back in when recess was over, and you'd do the same in the morning and for lunch and whatnot, all those periods. And so we'd march out of school, and we'd play workup, and the first one to run from the sidewalk where we were marched out after the principal blew the whistle that we were dismissed, then you'd be the first one up to bat. And while I was a lot smaller than most of the kids, I was very fast. And I was usually the first one up to bat, even 8th, 9th graders. That school, Marriott School, ended at 9th grade. So they'd delegate a couple of big, strong guys to hold me as soon as the principal blew the whistle so I couldn't run out and be first up to bat. But I loved baseball, and that was in the days before softball was invented. We used hard balls. Now, I have had bad hearing ever since I was young, rather bad, in my right ear on account of playing baseball, though. One day I was out in right field, as viewed from where the umpire is. I don't know how, I've forgotten how you designate right field anyway. That part of the field, and the shortstop in front of me, a boy whose name was Hipple, forget his first name, Clyde Hipwell. This long fly ball was knocked way out there in that field near a fence. It was a long, hard hit ball. And he was in front of me. He says, I've got it. You know, and he held up his mitt to get it. Mm-hmm. And it was such a long fly ball, he chickened out last minute to catch it, you know, afraid to sting his hand or something. And he suddenly ducked like that. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, I just turned my head because he was going to catch it.
Uh-huh.
And the ball came and hit me right square in the right ear.
Oh, but that hurt.
And in those days, you didn't get doctors for simple little things like having your ear bashed in. And that ear began to ache, something fierce, and infection built up in it, and I had quite a bit of trouble with that ear. We had a play practice. The schools used to put on little dramatic things. They had one really big dramatic production a year.
At the end of the year.
The end of the year. It's near the end of the school year. And I had a small part in the play. And so we went to the ward. The school building was just a four-room schoolhouse, upstairs, downstairs, hallways. And you did all your, the church, which was not too far away, maybe a block away, was where you put on your dramatic productions and whatnot. I can remember that Marriott Ward had a stage, had a very heavy roll-up curtain that sort of rolled up, you know, from the bottom. And stage lights. And I was there practicing the play, and that pain got so unbearable, I went crying to my teacher, and she told me to go home, and then my mom and dad put warm oil in it and things like that, but I lost some hearing in that.
I didn't even know that all these years.
Just recently I lost hearing in this one. I really lost it in this one. I had a huge blowout in my high pressure machine about 2 weeks ago, the loudest one I've ever heard in my 25 years.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, it hit the wall. It seemed like I was behind the shield, but a really huge blowout. I saw the fire come out. It would have had to have been about at least 4 to 5 feet sheet of fire. I'd seen that before in the early days of high pressure. I saw that fire and that noise. It's just like it hit the wall and was focused right in that ear. It almost knocked me off my chair.
Mm.
And that ear rang for 3 or 4 days.
Oh, my.
Doctor told me to come down and see him, but he never.
Yeah, I've never gone down to see how much hearing I've lost, but I'm getting pretty deaf now that I've had those two accidents. Well, back to where we were, things I like to do. Well, I was good at baseball, and so I liked that. I also liked basketball. I was not so good at that, but I like to play basketball. We played football.
And your radio.
I think another one of her questions coming later will lead me into that. Let's see, what else? I liked riding my bicycle. I liked to be on the go. I was just a natural go kid. I'd get on the bicycle and I'd go ride the 5 miles to town. I'd ride over to Wilson Lane, all through Slaterville.
And you didn't have any for your mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, your mother must have been very, you know,
very
trusted you or
very
something.
Very trusting and tolerant of what I did.
How old were you when you were gallivanting all around like that?
Well, I think it started when I was about 8, 7 maybe.
You had your boy.
I love swimming. We had a swimming hole on our own property, and all the neighborhood kids swam in the swimming hole at the end of our 5-acre farm. It was at the north end.
That's where they held you under the water.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Who were your neighbors? What do you remember about them?
Well, rather, our house was on the north side of the street, and almost directly across was a Stanger family. Earl Stanger was the father's name. There was a daughter and a son that I remember. The son's name was Irving Stanger. Parents were not active in church, as I remember. They sent their kids. I had a fair amount of trouble with the Stanger boy. He was younger, but he was a husky, heavy kid. And he was somewhat of a bully in his youth. Gave me a bad time on a number of occasions. To the east of us, this is farming country, the houses weren't all that close together, was a Dana family. A red-headed boy named Max Dana showed up at the school one day as a new student, and I sort of fell in with him right off. He just seemed to be a kid I liked. The Dana family was not active in the church. The father smoked, and they had quite a few kids. The father, I know my parents were concerned associating with that family so much, and I used to defend them once in a while. I remember specifically one time they says, well,
they're
talking about them, and I says, oh, but Sunday I was over to Dana's and the father was reading the Bible, which he was. Most of the kids were pretty rough in their talk, but many of those farm kids were. Almost all of them swore all the time, probably like the Bad News Bears, which I didn't see, but they used all those words that you've said they use. Bad News Bears.
What's Bad News Bears?
It's a movie with kids swinging.
It's too bad, but that film may have been quite realistic from what I saw when I was growing up. especially out in that farming country, the kids were quite tough. And I don't know that their parents knew they did. I'm sure I took up some of that swearing, but I tried to not do it. You know how the peer pressure was. I don't think I really, on occasion, I may have done it, but not much.
I never heard you swear the whole time you were raising me. I can say that.
The only swearing habit I can remember during the Navy days, I did pick up using damn and hell once in a while, and that was hard to quit that when you get used to it. In fact, I knew a couple of general board members who couldn't quit using those two words, using to this day. When appropriate, you know, not every other one like lots of people do, but when appropriate.
When is a swear word appropriate? I heard somebody say that if you swore, it was just a sign that you were going to swear. It was all limited.
Well, some farmers were great swearers. Even a member of the bishopric, when he'd get mad at his horses and team, boy, you can't imagine what flood of swear words would come out. I can remember that from a member of our bishopric.
That's then, what my mother's
my then we used to have an old Dutch brother who was a nice old man. His wife was even nicer. I think their name was Hansen. That's not a Dutch name, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was.
They were probably Swedish or Danish.
Well, no, they were Dutch. And they'd come from Holland at any rate. And, man, he'd get his team and he would start in Dutch, you know. You knew it was swearing from the way he did, but many farmers seem to be that way. Well, let's see. What were we talking about?
Okay, just.
Oh, neighbors. Okay, the Slaters lived sort of across from the Danas, who were to the east of us. And the Slaters had a large family, I think about 12 children. Some of the kids my age, there was an Alma Slater, a little older. There was a Marcia Slater, who played the piano in church for us. She was a nice girl. She was a bit older. She died. I think it was Marcia who died. Or was it Eleanor? I think it was an Eleanor Slater. I think she was the one who died at in her teenage years. Just a little younger than I was Blanche Slater. And then Marjorie Slater was the last one I remember, although I may have had some younger ones after that, after we moved from Marriott. We went to Marriott in about 1927 and left in about 1933. Next house east of Slater's was Ritchie. He was the bishop of the ward, a very fine man. I remember him as being older than my parents. He would speak softly, he was kindly. He's just the kind of a man you would expect a good bishop to be. You know, kind, gentle, a gentleman. Soft-spoken and nice.
Just like you.
And he had a very large family. He had at least a dozen kids. His mother lived in a little house next to their house. The Ritchies must have been fairly well-to-do. I think his father, I think his name was James Ritchie, and I think his father's name was James Ritchie, and his father, I think, would have been a counselor in the bishopric with my grandfather, Helen Henry Tracy. No, the James Ritchie was the bishop. My grandfather, Helen Henry Tracy, was a counselor to this James Ritchie. And I think my grandfather got a little disturbed because this Ritchie was a sheep man, and he would take off all summer long with his sheep and leave the ward with my grandfather. But that Ritchie family was a good, they were a really good family. But I started to say their home and their farm was neater and nicer and larger, seemed to be equipped with good implements and whatnot, as though they had a little more money. Oh, they never made any show of that. I remember their farm as being a well-kept, nice farm. And most farms, of course, those were Depression years, were run down, poor equipment, and things like that. We had a horse when we first went on the farm. His name was Nig. He was a white horse. It's just the name he had when we got him. I used to like to ride him. I didn't like horse riding too much because I would get a pain in my side when I would ride a horse. The galloping action would always give me a terrific pain in my side. And so I didn't enjoy horse riding too much on that account. But for just going gently around the farm, I like that. We got rid of that horse. I think we probably only had him our first year on the farm. I don't know why they got rid of him. He stepped on my toe once. Barefoot. Neighbors going across the street west from us, another Stanger family. I forget his name. Some of the boys were Gene Stanger. May have been an Earl. There was a girl, Clonda, who now I think calls herself Connie. This Clonda Stanger worked at Internal Revenue Service with my brother Donald's wife. What's her name?
Louise.
There was, Plana had an older sick sister, her name does not come to me right off, was a really nice young woman that I remember because she was a nice girl. Further to the west of them were the Marriotts, the famous Marriotts who went to Washington and made it good in the hot dog stang business and expanded into
hot shops
and hotels and all the rest. They lived there. The J. Willard Marriott, who was the man who apparently, you know, he and his wife sort of got started and did most of it. I think he may have left Marriott just about the time we moved to Marriott in 1927. I think that's about the time he went off to Washington, D.C. On the other side of the street, there was a house below us on the same side, the north side of this street. whose name sort of escapes me. I remember them because they had an Essex automobile, a beautiful touring car that they had purchased brand new, that had all the chrome and the extra spare tires and just an expensive car for that day. I can't think of their name. Then came the pea vinery on the corner, which is quite a stink in the wintertime, summertime, during pea harvest time. And, because, you know, they stacked all the pea vines out in a huge stack, and it fermented. And the cows ate that. It was good for the cows, apparently, although I think it was probably a little bit alcoholic. But the stench of the old pea vineries that used to dot the countryside was really something when the wind was blowing the wrong way. Below them was a family named Amadon. And I can remember they had some girls, but that's all.
You should remember those girls.
Yeah. And then it was just fields below that. That's the end of the street on which we live. We came to some fields and a big swamp. Mom and I went out there a year or two ago just to see what was in that part of the country. And there are houses everywhere now on the land we used to own. It's become a suburban area. Has a dozen or more homes.
All built up now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's too bad. What about early church activity?
Well, I usually had a church job. I can remember being in little church productions. My mother was in the primary. I can remember having parts in primary plays. I guess they used to have an annual primary night just like they do today. I can remember memorizing little parts and wearing high hats, like I was a missionary or something in ancient days, in older days. We were always active in church, whether sometimes we had an old Ford truck to drive in, sometimes we had to walk to church, which is about a mile or a mile and a half away. But our family was always active in church as far as meeting attendance was concerned. I don't remember too much what my father did in the church in Marietta. My father at times rode a bicycle 5 miles into town to work when he's working, I believe, for Nelson Rick's Creamery. We had a couple of Model T Fords. One was a truck, neither one of them very good. Not at the same time. Later on, I remember sort of a touring car Ford that did not have a top on it. We had a cow in the early days. I had a hard time milking it. My hands weren't strong. I remember my dad getting provoked at me because I couldn't ever seem to learn to milk the cow. I just could not squeeze the cow hard enough to get the milk to come out. Later on, I think we bought our milk from other farmers who had milk cows. Our farmhouse was an old adobe house, which had been plastered over. It was obviously an older section and a newer section to the house. The house was sort of in the shape of a T. It had a porch along the front. It was a very run-down house. We had usually only the kitchen stove for heat. But I can remember my father doing some remodeling, laying some bricks on an old section of the house which was knocked, really run down with the roof caved in and whatnot. He fixed that into a new kitchen. We had a pump in the kitchen. Wells in those days were driven by hand with a sledgehammer. The pipe probably only went down about 20 feet. So we did have a pump inside the house and a basin. No running water, you know, like modern day. You'd wash your, you'd heat the water on the stove in a tea kettle and pans and wash your face in a basin. Outdoor toilet, quite a ways from where the pump was, so it wouldn't contaminate the water. And so in the wintertime, you'd have to run outdoors, go to the John. No toilet paper. You used old newspaper, old Sears Roebuck catalogs, which my daddy, when I was young, taught me how to crumple it up while you were sitting there to get it so it would be softer. And well, lots of practical things you have to consider in those days. Our house had a slanting floor in the living room. Our grandmother Tracy lived with us. She lived in a sort of a front bedroom. Then there was a kind of a living room. Behind that, a kitchen area and a storage area where I know Mom had her canned fruit. No basement. And then there were two bedrooms, and you had to go through the first bedroom to get to the second bedroom. I can remember how wonderful it was one winter when my father got a pot-bellied stove in the furthest bedroom, so that now we had that pot-bellied stove to keep warm by, in addition to the kitchen stove to keep warm by. See, before that, you'd just get into your night clothes and run into the bedroom and get under the cold sheets to try to stay warm. It was a really old house. As I remember it, my father paid $1,600 for this 5-acre farm and home. And it proved to be too much money. He couldn't keep up the payments. They got in a little bit of trouble. They sold the farm. They got tricked in the sale of the farm, didn't end up with any cash. And we moved into a home at 654 30th Street, which was in a brickyard. We seemed to like brickyards. My mother grew up in a brickyard. We grew up in one half a mile north of her brickyard. The clay in the hills around there was the reason the brickyards were there. But this old brickyard home, my father paid $8 a month rent for in the beginning days. Later on, the rent was raised to $12. It was an old frame house, the worst looking building in our ward. But that's what we lived in when we were kids, because we were rather poor.
What was Christmas like in your home?
Well, Christmas is something all kids look forward to. I think some of our Christmases were very bleak, because one Christmas I was allotted, and maybe my younger brothers were not allotted that much, I was allotted 15-cent expenditure for Christmas. And I bought a coping saw. A coping saw is, they now call them jigsaws. I used to call it a coping saw, but it has a wooden handle, it has a frame that's a U-shape like that, and then this little tiny blade across it.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted a blade so I could cut out things in wood, and make circles and curves and things with this wooden saw.
How old were you then, do you think?
I was 9. I was 9 years old, 4th grade. I remember that very much, how much I wanted that coping saw. And I could get it for my 15-cent limit in those days.
Well, then, what happened? Your parents gave you the money, and you went out and got your own?
No, they got me. I had to pick something that wouldn't cost more than 15 cents.
And then they get it.
And they got that.
Well, what about family traditions? Did you decorate a tree, or did your mom make a certain kinds of food at Christmas, or what did you go through? What was a Christmas tradition?
Well, when I was real young, I don't think we had any Christmases. I don't think they could afford. I don't remember Christmas trees and things like that. I think they were too poor to have them. Later on at 30th Street, I know we had Christmas tree. We may have had them on the farm, but I certainly don't remember them. If we did, it was rare. I can remember popcorn strings on Christmas trees, and perhaps we had one on the farm in Marriott. Maybe we had one every year for all I know. I don't know. I don't remember any big trees. Certainly until 30th Street, when we did have a big tree in the corner. But I was teenage then. I don't remember that tree until I was perhaps 17. I think we hung up stockings or something like that, and I know that we had a few things like oranges and little candy peanuts in the stockings.
What Thanksgiving traditions?
No traditions that I can recall, other than that we did have a Thanksgiving dinner, as a rule.
Did you have a turkey for Thanksgiving? Was it?
I can't remember that. I don't know.
Can't remember what you ate. Did you have a favorite uncle or relative?
Well, in a way, we had a few uncles in Marriott. Let's see, maybe I should take that back. My Uncle Helan lived in Marriott, my grandfather's oldest son, my mother's oldest brother. Uncle Helan, he was a counselor in the bishopric. We had uncles not, I guess they were cousins. They were old people, and we used to think of them as uncles. But you see, my mother was one of, next to the youngest. No, my mother was third from the bottom in a line of 14 children. And so the older brothers and sisters had children who were almost as old as my mother, see?
Oh.
So I'd think they were an uncle, but they were cousins. And I can remember one of these cousins who was a butler. His wife was Mary Butler. She's the one who gave me piano lessons briefly when I was in Marion. I think she'd have given them to me longer. It's probably my lack of practice and lack of interest that didn't keep her coming, keep me coming longer. But I remember at least through part of a school year, she gave me some lessons for free because my mother thought I had some talent there that ought to be developed. So that was Aunt Mary. I can't think of her husband's name. And their children, I think there was a Carl Butler. I used to go play with those children sometimes. Then my Aunt Mary had a son, Henry, who was a policeman in Ogden, a detective in Ogden and whatnot. And they had kids that I used to play with. They lived on what was called Broom's Bench, which was about a mile, maybe a mile and a half, or maybe even 2 miles due east of where we lived. These areas are not there anymore. They were taken over by the Utah General Depot during World War II. Most of Marriott disappeared during World War II when the war effort decided to locate war facilities there, huge storage facilities. Later on, the Internal Revenue Service came in. And there's so little left of Marriott and also of Slaterville, which was a little bit west and north of Marriott, that those two areas are joined together now, and they have this, a chapel that is Slaterville Marriott Chapel. I had an Aunt Jane who lived on Broom's Bench. This is a higher bench, you see, than the flatlands of Marriott where we live, who was my grandmother Emma Burdett Tracy's sister, who also was a wife of Helen Henry. They had kids that I saw a little bit of.
Also was a wife. Was he polygamous then?
Oh, yes.
That was
my grandfather had three wives. And
did you know all the three wives right then?
No, I only knew the two wives. I can remember Aunt Jane's funeral when she died. Uncle Aaron lived in Ogden. Didn't see too much of him, but some. Then most of the uncles and aunts lived up in Idaho. In 1927 or thereabouts, there was a Tracy family reunion in Idaho Falls. We went up there on the train. I can remember that. I must have only been around 6 or 7 years old. May have been before 1927. I don't believe we lived in Marriott when we went up to that reunion, but maybe we moved in Marriott the fall of the year of the reunion. We stayed up there with Uncle Harold. He was kind of a favorite uncle.
Who, Uncle Harold?
Uncle Harold. He was a sort of a...
Now, what was his name?
Harold Tracy.
Harold Tracy.
He's a younger brother. In fact, he was the baby in the family, I believe. He had kids that we liked to play with, but we didn't see much of those. But he was the joker type of an uncle. You know, he'd come and tell jokes and, you know, real friendly kind of uncle. He had his problems. He used to smoke and a few other things. He went on a mission to the southern states and could tell good stories about that. I think he got over these problems. I know he did later on. But he was a fun uncle. Then there was Uncle Sam and Aunt Violet on the Hall side. My only living uncle, see, because Ralph Hall had died in the war. And my grandmother Hall and Grandpa Hall, and they lived in the same house. I would go there. I'd ride my bicycle over there on occasion and see them.
This Helon Henry Tracy, with his two wives, was he polygamous when you were a child still?
Well, he had died, see.
Oh.
He died when he's 49, as I remember it. So I never saw him. In fact, my mother hardly knew him.
Hmm.
He died when my mother was a young child, 6 or 7 years old.
But you knew the two wives?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they get along very well?
Well, yeah, presumably. But, of course, see, when I was a youngster, my grandmother Tracy was living with me. And Aunt Jane, as we called the other wife, lived on Broom's Bench with her son, Tom Tracy. Tom Tracy and his family, when I was young, they had problems not going to church and things like that. I think some of the kids turned out okay. There were some other relatives there on Broom's Bench that lived near the home. The home that my grandfather, Helen Henry Tracy, built was still in existence when I was a kid, but no one was living in it. And I remember it as a home that, see, my grandfather was a carpenter as well as a school teacher. I remember the home had a nice porch, and as I remember it, it had graceful posts and filigrees and things like that. But for some reason, the home was not being used. My Uncle Helan built a home of his own on my grandfather Tracy's land, there on Broom's Bench in the Marriott area.
Tell us about how the Depression affected your life and that of your family. And were you aware it was a depression at all? Or?
Yeah, I was aware that it was a depression, but, you know, it didn't affect my life. I knew we were poor and didn't have what other people had at all, but it never bugged me. And I can remember my father telling me that to never be jealous or never feel bad about people who had money. That was wrong.
I just remember a story about when they had to sell their farm. I think Uncle Donald wrote it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure... You know, parents would try and take care of the children without letting the children know what dire straits they were in to the extent they could, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure those were extremely trying times for my mother and father, that it probably kept them on edge an awful lot, you know. I can remember a few quarrels between my mother and father during that time where they were moving from the farm back into the city, and I'm sure the tensions were over my dad not having a job, you know, in the depression situation with no money, no food. I know we didn't have food. There were times when our supper was hot water with a little square of butter, salted and peppered, and bread. That was supper, lots of times.
Mm.
And we weren't alone in that. There were other people that would have been supper for.
Did you have any milk? You didn't have a cow or anything?
Well, we didn't have a cow at that point. School teachers and others were always concerned about my health. I was a real skinny, run-down-looking kid when I was young. They were afraid I was not getting enough eggs and citrus fruit and milk and whatnot, and that was probably true.
But your mom knew about nutrition. I mean, it was
Was
it a matter of education, or I guess it was a combination of things.
Well, they didn't.
Did she think that was a well-balanced meal?
Oh, I got it. No, I'm sure. Well, they wouldn't know about nutrition like they do today, but I'm sure they knew enough to feed you vegetables and milk and bread and whatnot. But if you don't have it to feed, what are you gonna do?
What can you do? How about your clothing? What kind of clothing did you wear during that time?
Well, the average farm kid wore a pair of overalls that had straps coming over the shoulder, made by J.C. Penney's. It cost maybe 39 cents. No shirt, no underclothing, barefooted. That's how you went around all the time.
So that's the only thing you had on?
Yeah, mm-hmm. All the time.
Is that what the other kids wore?
In the main, yeah. Farm kids usually wore just that.
So you went to school that way?
No, you went to school. You had a shirt and the overalls, or overhauls, as we used to say, and stockings and shoes. But just running around the farm and at home, just a pair of overalls, that's all you want.
Hmm. It'll make the laundry easier. Not so much to launder. Okay, you have any other
thoughts? In the wintertime, I'm sure we wore more than that.
Oh.
But in the summertime, you know, just running around the fields and swimming and whatnot, that's what you wore. We may have worn underclothes. My mother was fussier about some of those kind of things than the other kids. We may have had underclothes, but some of the kids didn't.
What kind of wages? Did you work during the Depression? Were you old enough then to get jobs?
I had my first job when I was 8. And it was hoeing beets for somebody. Now, Eugene and I used to hoe beets and weed for this Dutchman, this Brother Hansen I talked about, and sometimes for Mr. Dana, and sometimes for a Mr. Morris, who lived southwest of us. And the standard pay was 25 cents for an 8-hour day for that kind of work when you were a 10-year-old kid. Well, I had my first job when I was 8, and I saved my money, and I can remember saving it in silver dollars. And on a bureau in our house, I can remember a bottle with 8 or 10 silver dollars in it that was money I had earned.
I'd like to have the silver dollars now.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I began to pay for some of my necessities at age 8. And buy my own clothing. Now, my memory might not be exactly correct, but I'm sure that I bought most of my own clothing from age 12 on, and I bought some things beginning at 8.
Hmm. Yeah. Did you feel that this was good for you?
Oh, yeah, sure. I loaned my father $20 once that I had forgotten about, so I know that at one time I had $20, you know, that I had saved up. During the Depression, I had forgotten that I even had the $20, but later on, when I started college, my father came forth with $20. I didn't have any money to start Weaver College. And I tried to turn it down. I figured I could get by because I had managed to get a janitorial job at Weaver College. But my dad, mom insisted I take it, and they told me that they were just repaying $20 that I had loaned to my father years before when he had borrowed the only $20 that I had saved up to go to Nevada to look for a job, to look for work. So I know during those youthful years I got up to $20 at one point. That's probably a lot of money.
That's
when you're
good in those
12
days.
Years old, so.
I'll say. What did you always pay your tithing on that?
Oh yeah, always.
Did you have any special goals when you were saving that money? What were you saving it for at that age? Or did you need to spend it all for necessities?
Well, before that, I saved money. I became very interested in radio, and I learned from other older boys in the neighborhood and from magazines and books that I would get at the library that there was such a thing as a crystal radio. And that's the earliest thing I can remember deliberately saving money for, was to get my own crystal radio. And I built one, and it worked. And my first radio in the Howard Hall household was my crystal radio, with earphones and a coil I'd wrapped around a Calumet baking powder can for an inductor on the radio.
What kinds of jobs did your father try to get during that time?
Well, he worked for a while for this Nelson Rex Creamery. I don't know what other kinds of jobs he had. I think he tried selling and other things. He had been an insurance salesman early in his marriage. So he quit the railroad, where he had terrific seniority, because he went to work on the railroad when he's 11 years old. But he quit the railroad because the environment wasn't good and he would have to work on Sunday. And after he joined the church, he, you know, he didn't want to be on the railroad. But he never really had a good job after that. That was, he would have had an excellent job, you see, as a railroad man. But So he sacrificed in that respect. And caused his family to sacrifice, I guess, but nobody objected to that. We're always proud our dad quit the railroad.
This you sort of answered, but you can tell more. Can you remember the first time you heard a radio or saw a TV? What about cars?
I can't remember the first radio I heard. I'm sure I heard it in neighbors' houses in Marriott. That was probably the first. But I certainly remember my first crystal radio. And then, maybe 6 months or a year, or maybe a couple of years after my crystal radio, my grandmother Tracy got an Atwater Kent radio. And it was the greatest thing in the house, you know, this magic thing that would get stations from all over. And my grandmother, "I want that tuned to KSL only." It was my grandmother's radio. She was an invalid, you know, and she needed something like that. But she loosened up after a while and let us monkey with the dials and find all those others. But for her, she just wanted to tune to KSL, period. One of her grandsons became a salesman in some store that sold radios. And he got this radio for her for, as I remember, something like $30, supposed to have been a $50 radio. But as the years went by, I sort of inherited that radio, and I took it all apart and knew all about it. It's too bad it still isn't around. It was that kind that was in a metal cabinet, all about, 2 feet long and 10 inches wide and 10 inches high with little rubber feet. And the metal lid came off the top. And the speaker was separate, and a cord ran from this main control over to the radio, or the speaker, which sat on a kind of a low pedestal.